Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Wrestle Chat Radio's Hell in a Cell review. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Hell in a Cell at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, I open up my mailbag this morning and I look through social media, and all I'm seeing is ultimate praise for the most part for Hell in a Cell. And I have to tell you that in part I agree. In part, I do agree with this. It was a really, really well done event from the standpoint of they did not overbook this card as far as matches are concerned. They did not put 14 matches in a 3-hour pay-per-view. We had, I believe, 7, and most of the important ones was given plenty of time. And that's the important factor. You know, there's this big sort of, what's the right word for it? I don't want to call it a bluff, but it is actually a bluff. There are a lot of people saying Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, which started the official pay-per-view. We had a pre-show match, but the official pay-per-view was started by Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And I have heard nothing but match of the year, match of the year, match of the year. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I love the match. But if you take away the storyline, if Jey Uso and Roman Reigns just had that match, no storyline, no pomp and circumstances, just that match, people would say it was all right, it was good, it was okay. What made that match and what made all of these matches that everyone is raving about is not the actual physical activity inside the ring. It was the buildup, the emotional investment in the angle and who wins, and the ability to flesh out these characters and see where things are going. That's what made it so good. So if you're among the idea that this is a 5-star match, it's a 5-star match, 3 stars because of what happened in the ring, 2 stars because of what happened outside the ring. And this is what we've been calling for on this show forever, and that is you have to make people care about who wins and loses and why. Because then the illusion comes through, doesn't it? No one ever says Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant was a 5-star match. No one ever says that. They sold out the Pontiac Silverdome. And the reason it did was because of the two competitors and the emotional investment we had in this, in that storyline. And that can give the illusion of a match being much, much better than it really is. If there was no investment in that, if it was just Joe Smith and Jack Brown and they had that exact match, you'd be like, eh, it's decent. What made it great was your investment in the characters. And the WWE did a good job. I'm not knocking them. This was a great opening match. They gave this, with the introductions and everything, damn near 30 minutes. And in what I consider to be a really, really, really strong booking decision, they kept Jey Uso strong by not having him say, I quit, until someone else's health was on the line. I think that was actually kind of smart. I think Roman Reigns showed he could do a decent promo. He could tell a good story. What you are seeing here is the evolution of Roman Reigns to the next level. And don't say I didn't tell you. Way back when you all had your We Hate Roman pants on, and he sucks and he can't do a promo and he's an idiot. I said, no, he's not. He's trying to be something he can't be, and he's a little bit confused about what the WWE wants him to do. Do they want him to be a gentle, you know, soul, and or do they want him to be this angry, violent, but still a face? Do they want him to be a tough guy? Do they want him to be soft-spoken? He didn't even know. He didn't even know what he was trying to do. He was trying to do everything at once, throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, and nothing was sticking. And in the meantime, they were force-feeding him down our throats. Now you see what I saw all that time ago, and that is he has all of the talent he needs. You just got to give him some direction. You can't have an actor walk onto the set of a movie and he says, okay, well, what's my character? Yeah, your character's name is Joe Smith. Well, who is he? I don't know. What does he do for a living? I don't know. Well, is he a good guy, a bad guy? He's okay. Well, what do you want the guy to do? You have to flesh out the character for them, and then they can do it. Well, Roman Reigns knows who he is with his character, and he's running with it. Now, the actual physical match itself, without the storyline, without the story they told, that Jey Uso refuses to quit until his brother comes in and gets in danger, that Roman Reigns wasn't really crying about what he did to Jey Uso, but what he was about to have to do to Jimmy. That's the important factor in that match. The emotional connection is what was important in that match. The physical match itself was a 3. But when you add the storyline and the elements into it, it's a 5. I agree with you. But this is what I'm saying, that the WWE needs to do more often. They have to up the ante when it comes to what happens outside the ring. The emotional investment we get with these characters, the story and the way it plays out. And later in the show, they blow it. Not with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And we'll get to that. But let's just stick with this one for a minute. This could have been the match of the night. It probably was, actually. Probably was match of the night. And the reason, I know a lot of people are saying, why do you lead off with this match? Why do you think this match was the kickoff? It seems a little ridiculous since it had such a big angle and it was so important and it was what everybody was waiting to see. Yeah, you know, I agree, but what I think is that they understood that a title was changing hands. When Roman Reigns was announced with Jey Uso as being the opening match, I said to myself, Randy Orton's winning the belt. There's no other reason. There is no other reason. So sometimes the order of the matches can give away what's happening. Because there was no doubt in my mind as soon as they said that's going to open the show. I said, well, Randy Orton's the new champion then. Because they want to close with something big. They're not going to close with Drew McIntyre, Claymore kicking Randy Orton, and there's a 3 count. The only other thing that could happen is Brock Lesnar might show up. And that could be why they're holding that back for last. But aside from that, I was pretty confident that Randy Orton would be the new champion after hearing that. But I think they wanted to start this out with a bang, and they really did. And maybe they wanted to set the tone for the night and have the rest of the locker room have to follow something like that. Paul Heyman used to do that all the time. I personally talked to Paul Heyman in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. And his philosophy was, if the opening match steals the show, then you're not working hard enough in your feature match. I'm not handcuffing anyone, and I'm not telling people not to do moves, and I'm not telling people not to try to win the crowd over. They're going to go out and wrestle to the best of their ability, and if you can't match it, then that's your problem. I'm not dumbing anybody down to make you look smarter, in other words. And he never did. And so I think the WWE finally last night said, hey, follow these guys then. You know they're going to put on a great match. You follow them. And maybe you won't be lazy. And maybe you won't be complacent. And maybe you'll try a little harder. It's tough without a real audience. Last night, more than ever, I was aware of the fake soundtrack. And it was really, really, really bothering me. Well, what's your thoughts on this, caller? I mean, I think the very, very first match, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, was exactly what the WWE needs.
It's me, Mark. It's me, Todd.
Oh, okay. Hi, Todd.
Yeah. Like you said, last night when they had the Roman Reigns and Jey Uso match, it was just, I kind of knew the WWE champion at the end of the night.
No question. Well, your phone is kind of cracking up, but yeah, absolutely. That was a dead giveaway, and that's unfortunate. But still, it was a great match. But I want people to understand why it was a great match, because there's an illusion that, no, they went out and put on a 5-star match, and it didn't matter if we didn't know who either of these guys were. If you just stumbled into the show and never knew one guy from another, you'd have said it was a 5-star match. No, you wouldn't. What made it good was you were emotionally invested in both of these characters and their storylines. That's what made it good. And they did an excellent job. An excellent job. Because now I'm actually looking forward to Friday and what's going to happen. And that's their job. Their job is to get you to say, I want to know what's going to happen in the next chapter of this story. Now, we didn't talk, I know, about the 24/7 thing. Let me just say this. If this is the way you're going to handle the 24/7 belt, I'm all for it. Let them wrestle in the ring. That's exactly what I want out of it. If you want this to be a belt for the undercard, I applaud you. This is exactly what the undercard needs, something to aspire to. I'd love to see the people you very seldom use get a chance at a title. In the ring. Not running around behind the scenes with 9 guys behind you like the Three Stooges trying to roll somebody up in a schoolboy. I don't want to see that anymore. If you want to handle it this way, where they actually go in the ring and wrestle for the belt, I'm all for it. R-Truth wins, obviously, retains the belt. That's fine. Yeah, listen, Drew Gulak is a better wrestler than people give him credit for. He's better on the mic than people give him credit for. But at this stage of the game, I think he's going to have to prove himself all over again. And let him do this for a little while, and we'll see. I think he'll move up the card eventually. I really do. For R-Truth, he's not going to move up the card. He's 50. This is his last hurrah, and that's good. He's adding a lot to the show, so I'm fine with that. Didn't really have a problem with it. I do hope they continue that trend of letting the 24/7 belt be defended in the ring. Made a big difference to me. Now, remember when I said later on in the show, they blow this whole thing of being emotionally invested in characters? Well, we didn't have to wait long, did we? Elias and Jeff Hardy. Now, if you didn't catch Elias's song on the pre-show to Jeff Jarrett, you really should go back and watch it. It was very funny. Elias is very talented when it comes to doing these parody song things. But once again, we have this disconnect where they want you to boo Elias. They want you to say Elias is being unreasonable because he thinks Jeff Hardy hit him. He should know better. He should automatically assume it wasn't him. He should take Jeff Hardy's word for it, and he should just go out there and be, nice to Jeff Hardy. That, in what universe does that fly? The story you're supposed to be telling WWE is Elias isn't a bad guy. He truly thinks Jeff Hardy hit him with a car. And Jeff Hardy isn't truly trying to hurt or, hate Elias. He's trying to convince him I didn't do it because he feels guilty that Elias thinks he did. But that's not the story you're telling. You've decided that's not the story I'm going to tell. Now, I'd warned everybody that this would probably end up in a DQ because they're going to do this again, and maybe there'll still be more to the story, and I still think they're going in that direction. I still think they're going to go into the big reveal of it was Sheamus. And then you're going to have Sheamus and Elias feud. I still think that's the direction they're going. But if you are going in that direction, right now was the opportunity. And instead of Jeff Hardy being disqualified for hitting Elias with a chair, it should have been the reverse. It should have been Elias who beat the hell out of Jeff Hardy with the chair. Because then Elias could say, I don't know why everybody's mad over what I did. At least I didn't hit him with a car. I didn't see anybody. What, how about if I drive my car in here and run him over? Because the more Elias does to hurt Jeff Hardy, the more shocking the reveal will be when Elias realizes I did it to the wrong guy. You understand? That's the way the story should play out. Everything I did to Jeff Hardy was for nothing because he didn't do it. He was right. He was telling me the truth. That's the big reveal. That's the way the story is supposed to go. At this particular time, we're losing sympathy for Elias. We're supposed to have sympathy for Elias and Jeff Hardy. Both of these characters are supposed to be sympathetic characters. We can relate to Elias being angry and thinking Jeff Hardy did it. We can relate to Jeff Hardy saying I was set up. How's Elias supposed to know it? He wasn't around, right? And you're blowing that, WWE. This match was not really a very good match. And I think it was completely backwards when it come to the ending, Todd. I think that, once again, Elias should have been the one that was disqualified and probably should have beaten Jeff Hardy pretty severely.
You're absolutely right there with Jeff Hardy. Well, like you said, like I mentioned like a week or so ago, a while back, with the same situation with Stone Cold Steve Austin, who was looking for the Cobra who ran him over with a car.
Right. That's the same storyline, except we have one major difference. Elias thinks he knows who did it, and he's trying to get revenge on him. Your ultimate goal, I assume, unless you're brain dead, is to flip Elias face again. Because this has got to be leading to Sheamus versus Elias. What else would it be leading to? How could they get any closer to saying it? Actually, the guy who did it supposedly has red hair and a red beard. Well, who would that be? Sami Zayn's not on this brand. So that leaves one dude who is and just got switched to it, by the way. Oh, what a coincidence. So we know where this is going. So if you're going to flip Elias anyway, now is the time to give him the sympathy where the crowd says, I feel bad for Elias because he really thinks Jeff Hardy did it, but I know Jeff Hardy didn't. In other words, you could be fans of both of them. You could say, damn, Elias, come on, wake up. It wasn't Jeff Hardy. You're doing all this for nothing. Jeff Hardy can't be angry. See, that's where they're wasting emotions. Jeff Hardy can't be angry. Jeff Hardy's emotion should be, I'm telling you I didn't do it. What more can I possibly do? So if Jeff Hardy was to take that chair, lift it up like he was going to bust Elias in the head and throw it down and say, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it because you think I hit you with a car. I understand you're mad at me, but I didn't do it. And if I did, you think I'd have dropped the chair? I'd have just smashed your head in with a chair, wouldn't I? Wake up. I didn't do it. That would have been cool. You see, when Roman Reigns' emotion in the ring was correct, when Jimmy Uso got in the ring and said, what the hell are you doing? Roman stopped and said, I don't even know who I am anymore. I don't even know what to do next. And the emotion he was showing was we were faked into thinking he realized he went too far. But what we then come to realize is he was struggling with, I have to do something I don't want to do. I have to do something that I know is going to make me look bad and I know is going to hurt me and Jimmy Uso. But if I want to be the leader, I have to do it. And he did. That's called proper emotion. Jeff Hardy being mad, why would Jeff Hardy be mad? Please explain to me why Jeff Hardy's so terribly angry at Elias. For all Elias knows, Jeff Hardy hit him with a car. How is Elias supposed to know differently? Can Jeff Hardy say who really did it? No. So Jeff Hardy has to understand, I realize Elias is angry at me. I realize he's trying to kill me. I'd be trying to kill me too. But I didn't do it. So his motivation should be, I'm going to prove to Elias I didn't do it. Not, I'm just going to beat his ass with a chair until I get disqualified. That doesn't make any sense. So once again, there's poor character development there, and that's poor storyline development. After you just had a great character and storyline development, And that's a shame. It's a real shame. And then we didn't have to wait much longer either, did we? Because The Miz takes on Otis. And we had told you that Tucker was turning. If you listen to the show, we told you that Tucker is turning, but I didn't think he was turning last night. And I'll tell you the truth. He shouldn't have. Every motivation that I said yesterday, go back and listen to yesterday's show, when I was actually writing for Tucker, saying this is what he should say. I was always the backbone of the team, and he got all the credit because, you know, he's more charismatic or whatever, and he, you know, it was always Otis, Otis, Otis. It was never about Tucker. Everything I said, Tucker said. The problem is, there'd be no reason for him to try to help The Miz. This only should have happened if Otis tried to cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase. Because then he's cost Otis his actual, well, he still cost Otis his actual shot, but he never got in there with the champion. If you wanted to do this, the real way to do it was to wait until Otis went to cash in and then have Tucker cost him his chance. You rushed it. It doesn't have the same emotion as it should. These two guys were really close. You could have made it way, way, way better. You could have made this way better. For instance, Monday, Tucker needed a partner desperately. And who shows up? Otis. So that makes it look as though Tucker asked Otis, can you come here even if you have to disguise yourself or whatever? I need a partner bad. That totally underlies the point of Tucker don't want Otis on Raw because he moved to get rid of him so he could be his own man. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't make sense. The motivation should have been, I asked to go to Raw, Otis, because I needed to get away from you because you were overshadowing everything I did. You were getting the credit for everything I did. I couldn't breathe as a performer because it was always about Otis, Otis, Otis. And then I come here, and what happens? You show up. That should have been the way. But you can't do it after you just had him go get him to fight The Miz and Morrison. That doesn't make any sense. So Tucker's heel turn doesn't make a ton of sense now because it was mistimed and it wasn't done with the right people. I would have loved to have seen the end of this be Randy Orton going to get out of that cage, injured, hurt, sucking oxygen. Otis said he could cash in on anybody, any champion. So it doesn't matter that he's not on Raw. Otis to come down there, turn in the Money in the Bank, look like he's going to win, and Tucker stop him. Because Tucker's motivation should be, I don't want him to be the champion. Not, I don't want him to hold the Money in the Bank briefcase. And giving it to The Miz is a dead end. Because there's no one in their right mind thinks that The Miz is going to challenge Randy Orton. Or even Roman Reigns. So this is just a total dead end. I don't even believe The Miz is going to keep it. Something's going to happen. They're going to have to give it to somebody else because this makes no sense. And The Miz is being promoted as a mid-card comedy act at best lately. So giving it to him doesn't make any sense. They rushed the story and they blew it. You have to keep this going with Otis and Tucker, that Tucker really does need Otis. Anytime Tucker's in trouble, Otis shows up, even if it's not on the same brand. So that we clearly see that Otis does care about Tucker. And Tucker just gets annoyed because Otis is more popular. And he's stealing his thunder. That's the story that needs to be told. You're not telling that story now. And they're on different brands. So aside from a possible Survivor Series fight, what is it exactly that you intend to do with this feud? You got nothing for your Money in the Bank because you didn't plan it out ahead of time like you should have. This year's Money in the Bank sees zero cash-ins yet. I mean, Miz could still cash in. Asuka didn't cash in. She was just handed the belt. And now the guy who wins it doesn't even have it. It literally makes no sense. And if you're going to get a feud between Tucker and Otis, then I'm all for, and I called for it. You got to make this intensely personal. You've got to take a month or 2 months to show how dedicated Otis is to Tucker and how Tucker is growing increasingly frustrated with the idea that he needs Otis, not vice versa. And then Tucker lashes out and says, I don't need Otis. I got to do this on my own. Screw Otis. I'm tired of everybody talking about Otis. Then it would have made sense, and we would have had a really good motivation for him turning. Like the Roman Reigns thing. We understand Roman Reigns' emotions, what he's going through. That's why it's working so well. We understand the close relationship he has with the Usos. That's why it's working so well. He could have had it with Tucker and Otis, too. But you rushed it and you blew it. You could have it with Elias and Jeff Hardy if you did it right, but you're not doing it right. And that's the problem, Todd. They always seem to fail when it comes to multiple storylines at once.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with these storylines, I remember back in 1989, well, I think it was one of the primetime main events where Savage walked and his back on Hogan because Hogan took Elizabeth back to the medical department
right
when she got injured, and Savage turned right heel right then and there.
Wow, your phone is absolutely not, we're not going to be able to do this. Can't hear you. Anyway, yeah, what you're saying is the Savage and Hogan, the Mega Powers Explode thing. Look how long they built up Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan as a team, and, you know, we're the Mega Powers, and we're one big happy family. You didn't give Tucker and Otis enough time. You literally went from Tucker on Friday Night SmackDown saying, I feel like beating the Miz up right this very second, to I'm going to help him take the Money in the Bank briefcase away from my friend. That does not make sense. It just doesn't make sense. If you had played this out better, you would have had a great feud for Otis. Now you're not going to have it. We're going to get a one and done. You wait and see if that's what we're going to get. We're going to get a one and done here leading up to Survivor Series, and that's about going to be it. And we already know that the one they're going to run with is Otis, so how is this going to help Tucker in any way? You could have actually had Tucker be a top heel if things worked out. It's amazing how they can't seem to get two storylines going at once that really, really captivates audiences. They have to, well, we got one, and that's going to have to be enough. And that's a shame. So Sasha Banks and Bayley, they put on a better match than I had anticipated they would put on. Was it their NXT match? No, it was not close. But it was a better match than I figured they would put on. At least it told somewhat of a story. My problem with this is as follows. If you go back to NXT to Sasha Banks versus Bayley, you could not possibly have gotten a more sympathetic character than Bayley. That entire crowd was rooting for her because they had played it up so well that Bayley was the sympathetic character. She was the underdog. She was the person who was going to have to overachieve to win that match. They did not do that with Sasha Banks. Sasha Banks is the least sympathetic character in the world. Okay? No one has any sympathy for Sasha Banks because her face turn was only based upon a fellow heel turned their back on me. It wasn't that she had some come to Jesus moment. It wasn't that she, you know, had any, there's no reason to have any sympathy for her. She'd still be cheating for Bayley if Bayley didn't turn her back on her. So this is where the problem lies. The problem lies in the fact that there's no sympathy for Sasha Banks. The crowd can't root for her because Bayley just isn't all that horrific, and if she is, it's only because of Sasha. And Sasha's not that sympathetic because she still acts like she thinks she's better than everybody else, and she's the bling bling and you're nothing. it doesn't work. It worked in NXT because of that. Bayley was the girl next door, the girl who was a little bit shy, the girl who's like, I'm not so sure I can beat, you know, this girl who's confident and cool and whatever, and I'm going to have to go way above my grade to do it. And she did. That's why that match worked. Much like that's why Roman Reigns and Jey Uso worked, because of the way they portrayed those two guys. This one didn't have that. So while it was a good match, there was no one really, I don't think, super rooting for Sasha Banks, because she didn't have that moment. The WWE robbed her of that moment where she said, I feel like I created Bayley. This is my fault. I'm not asking for anybody's sympathy. I'm the one who did this. I turned my back on her time and time again, but the only reason I did it, if you want the truth, is to toughen her up. All those times I turned my back on Bayley, all those times I used her, all those times I did whatever, that broke my heart because I didn't want to do that. And I never really meant it. I still loved her. But I wanted her to toughen up because I knew if she did, she'd be the champion. And I was so proud of her when it happened. And then look what happened. It turned on me. I created this monster. This is my fault. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to allow it to happen. Because, unfortunately, now she's on a path of self-destruction. And I'm not going to watch my best friend destroy herself, in this manner. So I'm going to beat her and show her this isn't the way it goes, Bayley. Then you'd have had some sympathy for her, but that's not the case. It's like two bank robbers. And both of them shoot the tellers. And then because the one bank robber gets away with all the money, you're supposed to have the sympathy for the bank robber who got jilted? He just killed somebody. You don't have the sympathy for Sasha Banks, and that's why this isn't working. And it didn't work. Sasha Banks is the new champion. I don't know if she's going to keep it past, Friday. But the bottom line of the situation is no one is overexcited about it. And she feels very much like a transitional champion. She feels very much like, you know, this is going to not last too long. And I don't think Sasha's going to have that face fan support. I just don't. Anyway, Mike, I think that's the reason why, even though this match was good, it did not equal the NXT match.
Right. It was very good, very creative, you know, in what they did and some of the stuff they did. She did the Meteora several times in the match, but she found creative ways of doing it. And you're right. Now what they're trying, I think what they're going to try and do is see if she can stay healthy, because we've pretty much chronicled Sasha Banks's injury problems on this show. And that's why, you know, a lot of times when she's had the championship, they take it off her right away because they can't trust her to stay healthy, you know?
Right.
Now, if she can stay healthy for an extended period of time, there may be a shot at another match. It might not be such a transitional champion. Now, I don't know. I don't know who they're going to be transitioning to, because they really haven't built anybody else besides Sasha and Bayley. So if she's a transitional champion, who's she transitioning to?
I'm thinking either Bianca Belair or possibly if Tessa Blanchard comes in. But the bottom line of the situation is this. Even if she's not a transitional champion, is she going to be a popular champion? My answer is I don't think so. There's not a lot of sympathy for Sasha Banks regardless because of just her whole look and attitude. It's very difficult for her to play the role of the heroine. You know what I mean? It's very difficult. And the only way she could have done it, in my opinion, is the way I said. To try to take the blame for the way Bayley is. And say, I didn't realize. I thought I was doing it for her own good. And now I realize everything I did was actually just disrupting Bayley's natural growth into who she is as a person, and I feel terrible. But I'm gonna correct it. I'm gonna fix this. And I don't hate Bayley, because everything she did to me, that's because I taught her. I don't hate her. I'm just going to teach her that I was wrong. I admit it. I was wrong. See, that's what you have to do if you're going to get sympathy after you've done everything that Sasha Banks has done. We're supposed to all of a sudden just root for Sasha Banks because, oh, another bad guy turned on her. No, that's not the way it works. You've got it right with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. Learn from it. Learn from it. Then what happens literally just makes my head explode. Mustafa Ali challenges any member of the Hurt Business to pick any member of Retribution for a fight. Now, the only thing that makes sense is MVP, being a smart guy, picks the top guy from his faction to go against the weakest link of theirs. That makes sense from MVP's point of view. But Jesus Christ, you threw Retribution under the bus again. He taps him out in 3 minutes and then proceeds to beat Retribution up basically all by himself until the rest of the Hurt Business come down. Could you at least have let the Hurt Business beat up Lashley, 4-1? Holy mackerel. You want to talk about throwing them under the bus? I don't know if they could beat 3MB at this point. It's just ridiculous. There's no interest in Retribution. You can't. There's nowhere to go from here. Where are you going to go from here? You're going to fight Bray Wyatt? You think you're going to win that one? You can't beat the Hurt Business. Where are you going to go? Who are you going to feud with? I ain't liking it. You've already made them irrelevant. It was a dumb move. We then get to Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre in the cell, and unfortunately, because Roman Reigns and Jey Uso started this event off, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that Randy Orton was winning. WWE always wants to close their pay-per-views with a big, big moment, and a big, big moment isn't a Claymore kick in a 1-2-3. So if it wasn't going to be Roman Reigns and Jey Uso in that big moment, it sure as hell was going to be Randy Orton holding that belt. I already knew it. And I was right. My problem is, once again, you're trying to tell a story. I understand what story you're trying to tell. I don't like it. And that story is Edge is going to return for WrestleMania, and we're going to have an Edge-Randy Orton match for the belt. I don't like it. And the reason I don't like it is it's very obvious Edge isn't going to be the champion, or if he is, he's going to be a champion for one day, because he's only booked to have like 3 matches a year. And that was before his current injury. Just as injured as he was, he said, I can only do 3 or 4 matches a year. Now he's been injured again. And you're going to try this? I don't like it. I know that's where this is going, and I don't like it. Now, maybe they've changed their mind, and maybe they've said, well, if Edge can't do it, we'll just go back to Drew McIntyre. Okay, whatever. But then you've just given Randy Orton the belt for no real good reason. Truthfully, I'd have rather seen Drew McIntyre retain. I don't know who would have been next up, but I don't know who is next up for Randy Orton. Keith Lee. That's the only person I can think of. So we'll have something at the Survivor Series, and then before you know it, folks, it'll be the road to WrestleMania, right? I guess Edge is going to come back and win the Royal Rumble. That's the way it's going to be, right? I don't like it. No, he'll be number 30, too. See, that's... Yeah. Mike from Florida said this. He'll be number 30. Yeah, he'll be number 30. Oh, what a surprise. Edge is here. He's made his return, and he's throwing out some guy. Oh, God. You see, this is the problem. You can't be this. You just can't be this obvious. It's just. It takes away all the fun on the road to WrestleMania. You can't do this, WWE. You can't do it. So I'm left thinking to myself, well, this pay-per-view that some people are calling the pay-per-view of the year already, I don't feel the same way about it. I think there was a ton of missed opportunities. There were a ton of jumping ahead in storylines and not fleshing them out. The one thing you did right was Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. You did that as right as you possibly could do it. And that's why it felt so lackluster the rest of the matches. Because when we see Otis getting turned on by Tucker, you're like, that's way too soon and there's no real motivation for him to do that. That's dumb. When we see Jeff Hardy beating up Elias with a chair, you're like, wait a minute, shouldn't Jeff Hardy be kind of apologetic and saying, I know you think I did this, but I didn't. I don't want to blame you for thinking this. I don't want to beat you to death for thinking that I did it, because I'd probably think I did it too, but I didn't. You know, he has to be that kind of, none of the motivations were correct. And that's why we're not buying into them. You can't have Otis come and save your skin on Friday because the Miz and Morrison challenge you to a match and you ain't got no partner. And then say you're always sticking your nose in my business. Well, you're the one who went and got him. It just doesn't make any sense. It would have been better if Otis kept showing up. And Tucker kind of saying, "Oh, you're here again. Yeah, that's cool. That's yeah, good." And then you're starting to realize Tucker getting a little tired of this. Tucker thought he was away from Otis for a while, and now Tucker is starting to get a little aggravated that Otis is stealing his thunder over here, too. Then that motivation could have happened, but you didn't even bother. Friday night, he's saying he wants to beat the hell out of the Miz in the skit, and then Sunday, he's handing him the Money in the Bank briefcase. Doesn't work. It's too rushed. Because he just thought of it last minute. That's why. So, maybe we'll do this. Well, that's great, but when you say maybe we'll do this, then it has to be a month before you do it so you can work out these angles. Don't rush it. When you rush it, you kill it. You're not rushing Roman Reigns. We all know where this is going. We all know exactly where this is going, but you're not rushing it. You're doing it little baby steps at a time, and we're all on board for the ride. And that's what you need to do with everybody else, too. You got to learn from this. You got the WWE Universe eating out of the palm of your hand with Roman Reigns and Jey Uso and the whole Uso thing. You got this whole angle, you got them eating out of the palm of your hand. So what have you learned from that? I'll tell you what you've learned. Wrestling, professional wrestling, is 75% psychological and 25% physical. Period. End of conversation. And if you think differently, you're not thinking clearly. And if you're a wrestler and you think differently, you're not going to make it. I don't care if you're the uber athlete of all time and you can do moves nobody else can do. It's going to grow old after a while unless you can psychologically connect with an audience. And that's what Roman Reigns has done. Please tell me, Jey Uso. Since when did he have so much fanfare and so much attention paid to him? Never. It was fed to him by Roman Reigns because Roman Reigns' angle did this exactly correct. And whoever's writing this angle is doing it exactly correct. So he's going to get the rub from it. And so is Jimmy going to get the rub from it. And there's a million ways you can go with this. You can go with this that they gleefully say Roman Reigns was right and they carry his water and they're his thugs. You can do it that both of them are reluctant, but they feel they owe him because it's some honor thing in their heritage. Or one of them can say, I'm all in, and the other one can say, why are we doing this? There's so many ways you can go with this that the audience is anticipating, where is it going to go? You've got it correct. Now learn from it, WWE, Because you could do this with every feud if you just put the time and the effort in, Mike.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, and they're missing a part of this, you know. And they kind of messed it up a little bit because with the Roman Reigns deal, because they sent Naomi to Raw. You know,
yeah, I agree.
That would have been another branch on the tree if they had not have sent her to Raw. You know, I mean, and we've gotten into that, and that's about the only place in this whole situation with the Usos and them that they've made a misstep. Other than that, it's been good. You know?
Let's give them the benefit of the doubt, because maybe this is a story being told very slowly. And maybe the Usos have to be the henchmen of Roman Reigns for 3 months until Naomi gets involved in this storyline and says to her husband, what are you doing? You know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, because I don't know where the story exactly is going. If I had to guess, I would say this story is going the way of both of the Usos either reluctantly follow Roman Reigns for a while and they're reluctantly his henchmen, and then either come to accept it and enjoy the popularity of it or rebel against it. One of the two. Not sure which. If it's going the way of The Rock, then my assumption would be that The Rock is going to try to straighten it out and say, who do you think you are? You know, you're leading the family since when? You know, that kind of stuff. But I don't know. And because I don't know, this is why this is interesting. This would be the same way with Elias and Jeff Hardy. What you should do, if you're smart, WWE, is you should have Jeff Hardy, you should have Jeff Hardy lift that chair up to hit Elias and say, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction because I didn't hit you with a car. And if you think I did, why wouldn't I smash your head in with this chair? And then when he goes to walk away, Elias smashes his head in with the chair. Beat the hell out of him, get disqualified. And then Jeff Hardy on Raw tonight could say, I'm done with this. If you're too stupid to understand that it was Sheamus that hit you with that car, then I'm sorry that you're that dumb. Go ask people who were there. They said it was a guy with red hair and a red beard. Who the hell else is in here with a red hair and red beard? Your argument's not with me. It was Sheamus. Then you could get Sheamus involved, and Sheamus saying, look, I think it's very sad when an alcoholic has to pass his troubles on to somebody else and blame somebody else. But that's who Jeff Hardy is as a man. And that's who he's always been. He passes on his troubles to somebody else. It's not my fault. It's Sheamus's fault. It's not my fault. It's Elias's fault. That's the way he's always been. And Elias caught in the middle of, I don't know who to trust. I mean, Sheamus could go over to him and say, I've never had a problem with you. Why would I hit you with a car? Think about it. Why would I hit you with a car? And if the police thought I hit you with a car, why am I not arrested? Who did they arrest? They arrested Jeff Hardy. Don't listen. Then we have a very compelling storyline with Elias saying, I don't know what to think. I don't know what the hell to think. And we've got some intrigue. Maybe Sheamus is telling the truth. Maybe it really isn't him. We don't know for sure. At least you could give us that, WWE. At least you could give us that. But they're all wrapped up with Roman Reigns and the Usos, and they think the rest of it doesn't matter, Todd, and that's where the problem is.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about the Sheamus and the Jeff Hardy thing. Like you said before, we don't know. They don't know who did actually ran Jeff Hardy over.
No, because it was never announced. It was never announced, Mike. So you could play this up for all of its worth, and you could really have Sheamus look legitimately upset and say, "I didn't do it. I don't know what the hell he's blaming me for." And we'd have a little bit of a mystery.
And look, there are other people with red hair besides Sheamus in the WWE.
But not on that brand.
Yeah. Not on that brand, but they could play up it was somebody that's not on that brand, you know. They could play that up, and we know who that could be. You know, we know that recently he's had problems with, yeah, he's on the other brand, but Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
Because of the championship, you know. So there are stories to be told here with that. But again, we said it before, there are times when the WWE is flat out lazy in these things. And sometimes their laziness, I don't want to say works out for them, but it kind of does work out for them at some points, their laziness. But this is one of those points. They're just plain lazy here because they don't want to tell the story.
Why could they not simply have, I think this would be a compelling storyline. Why could they not simply have Sheamus say, you know how many different things you could get out of this? So Elias says, I don't know who to believe. Sheamus looks sincere when he says, I'm telling you, I didn't hit you with a car. I've done a lot of bad things in my life, but if I had a problem with you, I'd just come do what I did to Big E. I wouldn't hit you with a car. And if I had a problem with Jeff Hardy, I wouldn't try to frame him for hitting somebody with a car. I'd just beat his ass. Jeff Hardy saying, I don't care what anybody says. I wasn't drunk, and I didn't hit you with a car. Why could this not lead to it being retribution? They could easily put on a beard and a wig, one of them. We don't even know what some of them look like Slapjack. So you could just say, well, you know, we put on the wig and the beard and did this. And then you'd have a reluctant team of Jeff Hardy, Elias, and Sheamus against Retribution. That would be kind of fun. At least it would give them something to do. And you'd say, yeah, that was happening right around that time with the hacker and all that kind of stuff. I guess that makes some sense. Because the bottom line is you've got to start writing stories that make some sense, like Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. And you're not doing it. You're not giving us anything out of this feud. You're just giving us Elias thinks he got hit by the car by Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy says he didn't do it, and so now they're in a big fight, and that's just going to lead to nothing. Well, why should it lead to nothing? There's a lot of emotion in there. Use that emotion. As a writer, expand on that emotion and say, how can we get another guy involved? How can we get an extra person involved? How can we get people we're not using involved? How do we work people into this angle to make it better? That's your job. That's your job. I've just told you how to do it. You add Sheamus to the mix saying, I know where this is going. I hear the announcer saying he had red hair and a red beard, and who would that be but me? Well, stop it. I didn't do it. And I went square to Elias's face and looked him in the eye and told him I didn't do it. But it cast some doubt on Elias, who's saying, well, wait a minute. You were in a feud with Jeff Hardy at that time. You were accusing him of being an alcoholic and all that stuff, and the police did release him with no evidence. I don't know who to believe now. And maybe it's neither one of them, or maybe Sheamus is lying, or maybe Jeff Hardy's lying. There's so much you could do with it. Or maybe they're both telling the truth, and it ends up being retribution, or it ends up being somebody else who put on a red wig and a red beard, or it ends up being Sami Zayn who comes back on over to whatever has to happen. You have the opportunity to put branches on the tree and make fans really interested in this feud. Really interested in this feud. We're not now. I watched this match and I'm like, eh, whatever. You can't have that. And the same way with Tucker and Otis. I watched that and I said, oh, now I'm not going to be as interested in the feud as I would have been if you played this out for a month or two. Under no circumstances should Otis have lost the Money in the Bank briefcase until probably WrestleMania. He probably should have tried to cash it in at WrestleMania, and that's when Tucker does the big turn. That would have been cool, because then you would have had all this time to build up how close they are. You could have had Otis, you know, on SmackDown saying, the one thing I regret, you know, I miss Mandy, but we can still get together, but I don't get to see Tucker so much, and I think I'm just going to go over to, I know I can't wrestle there, but I'm going to go over to Raw and see him. And you could have them backstage segments on Raw where he's like, I showed up and I brought us some food. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And you could see Tucker slowly not liking this. slowly trying to get rid of Otis and saying, you know, you don't have to do this. And we see it building. Otis thinks he's being a good friend and that Tucker needs him and he wants to be there for Tucker. And Tucker slowly saying, do you not understand that I did this to try to get rid of you? Would have made sense. And then you would have had a really good feud that was based on real emotion and some real, you know, genuine fan involvement and emotional involvement by the fans. Right now, it happened too quick, Mike, and it leaves me flat.
Right, and then here's something else they could do. At some point, you know, in this long situation of him saying, I don't need you, or basically intimating that I don't need you, maybe being a little bit mean to Tucker and stuff, you know, biting comments and all that stuff, you could have Mandy Rose come in there and without Tucker being there, of course, have him come in there to Tucker without Otis being there, have him come in there to Tucker and say, what are you doing? Why are you acting this way toward Otis?
Yes. Yes, I 100% agree with that. Or you could have her go to Otis and say, Otis, I know that you and Tucker are close friends. But I think he might really be trying to get rid of you. I think maybe you should take the hint and have Otis be like terribly offended and say, you know, how dare you? How dare you talk about my best friend like that? I thought you were better than that. I thought you were, you know, I thought you really cared about me and you understood how you think I'm stupid. That's what you think. You think I'm stupid. You don't know. You don't think I'd know if my best friend was trying to get rid of me. That way you get some real sympathy when she's right. She's right. There's so many things you could do, Mike, and they chose the easy, lazy, quick way out again.
Right. And that's the thing. And that this whole situation doesn't give me any hope. A lot of hope for some of the other things that they may have on the back burner right now. Like, will they handle Carmella right in this new gimmick?
I know. You know. It seems they can only handle one gimmick at a time, Mike. They got the Roman Reigns thing down exactly right. It seems they can't handle two at the same time. They just can't do it for some reason. Because, again, they're not handling Elias and Jeff Hardy that well. I don't think they handled Sasha Banks and Bayley all that well. There was much more emotion that could have come out of that. But you have to understand that when Sasha Banks, who's been a backstabber, sneaky, self-indulgent, egotistical, I'm better than everybody type girl, has to change for you to feel sympathy for her. She can't just say, oh, well, She turned on me before I got a chance to turn on her. Fuck her. That's not great motivation for us to cheer. The great motivation for us to cheer is if she says, all this time I did this, I never really meant any of it. I was just trying to toughen her up because I thought she needed the toughening up. I never, ever stopped caring about Bayley. Ever. She just thought I did because I was trying to toughen her up and teach her a lesson. And now look what I created. Then we would have said, yeah, that makes sense. And we would have had something. So what was the pay-per-view? We're going to run a little over. Well, I'll tell you what. It's very hard for me to give Roman Reigns and Jey Uso anything but an A+. I cannot imagine you handling it any better. I just can't imagine it being handled any better. So that's definitely an A+. The rest of this, I think, was a C. So I'm going to give it an overall B- for the pay-per-view, Mike. What's your thoughts?
I'm gonna give it a little bit better than I'm gonna give it just a B, because I did like what happened in the pre-show match. You know, that's
yeah. At least they're fighting.
R-Truth and what's his face
and Drew Gulick. Yeah, I agree with that.
Right. So I'm gonna give it a little bit better than say B+. B, just flat out B.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. If you're going to hold the 24/7 belt, it'd be nice to see it in the ring. Kyle, what's your reading?
I echo the same grade with Mike.
Okay, so you guys liked it a little bit better than I did. My thought was too many missed opportunities to really flesh out characters. You've got to make the fans truly and honestly care about every single character. And your job as a writer is to find a way to do that. And it's not to rush through it. And it's not to do things that are illogical. And it's not to have people make moves that you say, well, that really doesn't make any sense, or that came way too quick. You know, you're not best friends with somebody one day and saying, I'm going to go to court and testify against the person who wrongly accused you. Fuck that person. And then the next day you're helping that person. That doesn't really make that much sense. You wouldn't do it. And so fans think to themselves, well, that's not something I would do. See, you're looking at Roman Reigns and you're saying his motivation is he wants to be the tribal chief and the leader of the family. He reluctantly is being forced to almost defend that position by beating down the other people in the family who won't accept the fact that he is their leader. This used to happen with the Indians and things. You know, so there was a chief, and if one of the Braves wanted to be the chief, they would fight sometimes. And it wasn't because they didn't have the respect. It was because, well, you got to prove that you're worthy to be the chief. I think I'm more worthy to be the chief. So the motivation is correct. That's why we're all into this. Sasha Banks' motivation is not correct because she was a lying, conniving, backstabbing SOB until Bayley turned on her. And why now is she suddenly Miss Squeaky Clean? She's not. Why would Jeff Hardy hate Elias for thinking he hit him with a car when logically, of course, you'd think he hit him with a car? And why would Tucker turn on Otis in a heartbeat after he just barely got done standing up for him in court? These three things are huge mistakes, Mike. And they could have been really, really good branches on a tree that had left us into a winter where we would have multiple great angles running at the same time. So they blew it.
Right. And I'll put it to you this way. Over the past few years, handful of years, maybe a little bit more, the WWE has been a company of contradictions and other things that, you know, that they do things that make you think, what the hell are they doing? And then they pull something out of their ass, or they luck into something that catches on. I mean, they lucked into Becky Lynch. Okay. They lucked into, I think you can maybe say they lucked into this whole thing with Roman Reigns, you know, because you have the guy, you know, you have the Usos. You could have been either one of the Usos that they did this with. It just so happens that one of them had gotten hurt.
Right.
And the other one didn't. So, you know, they kind of lucked into this with the Roman Reigns thing. I mean, it just seems that way to me. I don't know how it seems to you, Marcus.
Well, what is I realize what you're saying, that maybe they didn't plan this to be as good as it was, and the reason it's as good as it is because of the performances of Roman Reigns and the Usos, because they really are a close-knit family. I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. I think that Vince McMahon, according to Jey Uso, gave them a lot of leeway with this angle. Didn't write and script everything they said. And I think some of the genuine emotions you're seeing is very easy. Let me describe it this way. If you're an actor and you're told, okay, you're supposed to be madly, truly in love with this person on the screen, and this person is someone you absolutely off screen cannot stand, you wouldn't give them the time of day. You may be a good enough actor to pull off, I'm in love with her, but it's not going to be the same thing as if they say, we're actually going to use your wife as, or your girlfriend as this actress. Well, then that'll be very easy, won't it? A lot of the stuff that you're going to see on the screen is going to be kind of genuine. Because you can put yourself in that position and say, this is how I really did feel when I first met her. This is how I do feel. It's so easy. So now Roman Reigns in here with his cousins, this is real easy because they just act as though, if this was really happening, how would I feel? You know what I'm saying, Mike?
Right. I mean, think about it this way. When Macho Man... and Miss Elizabeth, yeah, they were still married, but when they on screen broke up, you felt for Miss Elizabeth because you knew they were still together, but not on screen. you know, because
right.
they could tell it because they really did love each other, you know.
And, Mike, I tell this story often. I was watching the WrestleMania with a huge group of people that Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior Randy Savage fighting the Ultimate Warrior. And when Miss Elizabeth threw Sherry Martel out of the ring and they reconciled and hugged, there were people in that room, grown men, with tears in their eyes. And when I saw it, I said, this is what professional wrestling is supposed to be. You have brought such an amount of emotional investment into these characters because it's real. Randy Savage was in love with Elizabeth. He was a little bit jealous of her. All the stuff they did was true. So it's very easy for them to play the part. So this is exactly what's happening with Roman Reigns and the Usos now. This is very easy for them to play the part. But then why is Sasha Banks and Bayley, who supposedly are really friends in real life, how come this isn't working so well? Well, the reason it's not working so well is you never gave Sasha the opportunity to explain her actions and why we should forgive her for the things she did. And if they had done that, Mike, I think this would have been a much better feud.
You're absolutely right on that. And think about it this way. Remember when they took the tag team titles around from Sasha and Bayley, and Sasha went and took a ball and went home, and then she said what she said, and we didn't want to pull for Sasha, but the thing she was saying was right, correct?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So, but we didn't want to pull for her. But because she was correct, she was right in what she was saying, we were almost, if they had brought her back right after she had said that, you know, reconciled or whatever, after she had said that, then you would have had the ability to turn her face because of what she said and go on from that. And then right now we would have had that thing, you know, where
it would be the same thing as if Elias finds out that Jeff Hardy didn't hit him with a car and says, okay, so he didn't, he still deserved to be beat up. Then why should we root for Elias? See, that's the problem. Sasha Banks got turned on. She turned on people all the time. So her reaction has to be, now I know what it feels like. And her motivation had to be, I never truly did turn on Bayley. I know it looked that way. I know you all thought that I hated her and I was trying to, you know, end her career and all. I never was. I was trying to give her tough love. I was trying to toughen her up because I thought she'd never achieve what she was capable of as long as she kept that attitude. And look what I did. I made a horrible mistake. Then we'd root for her because we'd say, okay, she, all that time that she did these horrible things to Bayley, she was trying to teach her a lesson, I guess. She just admitted I never not loved her or liked her. But it's the same thing as Elias. If we're supposed to root for Elias and he finds out Sheamus is the guy who hit him, and when they say, well, how do you feel about Jeff Hardy? And he says, big deal. So I beat up a junkie. Well, then we're not going to root for him. He has to be the guy who says, how do you think I feel? I spent the last month of my life accusing the guy who did absolutely nothing of hitting me with a car. I damn near crippled him. I made a complete fool of myself. And somebody's going to pay the price for that. But first I owe Jeff Hardy an apology. See, then you can root for Elias. So you have to take those things into consideration, WWE, when you're booking these matches. You have to. The Tucker situation. We said that's the way it should be, with Tucker saying, I'm tired of being overshadowed by Otis. That's the correct motivation, but you didn't give it enough time. He hasn't really been that overshadowed. He just got onto a new brand where Otis isn't. So he's not going to be overshadowed by him. If you were going to plan that, then the Friday where the El Gordo Grande showed up, or El Grande Gordo showed up, that should have been a surprise to Tucker. He should have had another partner lined up. And then out comes Otis saying, you know, no, we're partners. And he said, you know, I had a partner lined up, Otis. You didn't have to do this. Oh, no, I did. You're my partner. I wouldn't let anybody else, you know, take advantage that way, you know, or absolutely. We needed to teach those guys a lesson. And, you know, I got your back. I'm the guy who's always got your back. Cause then we would have seen Tucker going, I had a partner, Otis. Okay. I had a partner. You didn't have to come all the way here and pretend to be somebody else. No, he's the one who called him. So that's why it doesn't make any sense, Mike.
Right. It's almost a disconnect.
Right.
All right. Big disconnect. And that's another thing that, you know, continuity counts a lot of times. And there's another thing that you can say about the WWE. They are a company of disconnects.
Yes. You're absolutely correct. They need a continuity director. That's what they need. You know, I heard that word for the first time while I'm watching The Transporter 3. And there's a scene in that movie where Jason Statham's window gets shattered. His driver's side window gets shattered. And he's still chasing the guy who's on a motorcycle. And literally, he's still involved in the chase and his window is back to normal. And I'm saying, holy crap, man. He repaired his window in the middle of a car chase. That is talent. No continuity. You've got it. You've hit the nail on the head. There's nobody checking past episodes saying, I don't think we should do this because wasn't it Tucker who called Otis to be his partner and was real proud to have him there? And so how is his motivation? I don't want him around. He's overshadowing me when he's the guy going to get him. That doesn't make sense. Let's not do that. If he's going to turn at Hell in the Cell, let's have Otis crash the party. Tucker would get another partner. Or he could have said, well, I could have gotten another partner. Even if he didn't want him to have another partner, he could have said, Otis, you didn't have to do that. I could have gotten another partner. There was a couple of guys who, you know, I was targeting and I thought I could, you know, count on. Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. I got your back. That way we get the idea, Mike, that Tucker is on a new brand and he'd rather stay clear of Otis, but Otis won't leave him alone. Because Otis thinks that's what a good friend would do. And Tucker is saying, you're being a pain in my ass. Then if this happens, it works, Mike.
It really does. Then you can have all the underhanded comments by Tucker, and then you know, either Mandy goes to Tucker or she goes to Otis. You know, sure, Otis is on the other brand, but who's to say that Mandy couldn't go just for a visit? You know,
of course.
Otis sums up with Tucker. He's not. I've been watching it, and he's not treating you right. You know, he's saying things behind your back and under his breath. You know,
right, Mike? Wouldn't you have written after that match? Okay, Tucker saying, "I appreciate you coming, Otis, but you really didn't need to do it. I would have found a partner." Wouldn't you have written a skit a week or two after that where Tucker has a solo match with a couple of bad guys? Maybe it's even, you know, The Miz and Morrison, and they double team him. And here comes Otis to make the save, and Tucker could say, Otis, what are you doing? You're not even on this brand. Well, I was watching out for you. That's what friends do. No. And you could see it slowly, Mike, that Tucker is getting aggravated. You know what I mean?
Well, that too. But then again, look. Aren't The Miz and Morrison on Raw on SmackDown as well?
They moved to Raw.
You know?
I think they moved to Raw.
Okay.
So it would have worked.
Right. It would have worked, and that's the thing. And then go ahead and do whatever you got to do with the underhanded comments and the back behind the back comments and all that stuff. You know, just. Basically making Tucker look bitter.
Couldn't we have had one scene where Tucker goes to Mandy Rose, who's also on the thing, and says, look, you know Otis is my best friend, right? Could you please tell him that I don't need him to watch over me when I'm here on Raw? And then Mandy Rose could have said, what do you mean watch over you? You were getting your ass kicked by two people and he shows up to help you. And how ungrateful can you possibly be? You should be thankful that you got a friend that good. You know, get some bickering going. We're like, wow, there's shit involved in here, man. But you always have Tucker say, I love Otis, but he's got to realize I want to be my own man. That way, when he really does turn, we realize it's all out of jealousy. You got the girl. You got the push. You got the Money in the Bank briefcase. I got shafted. Then you say, okay, I see what his point of view is. He's jealous.
And then you get a slow burn there. And then maybe before that match, Marcus, she keeps going to Tucker, and he gets tired of her going to her, and maybe she's a performer, she's an athlete. Maybe he does something to her, maybe power slam, maybe lays a hand on her or does something, and he gets back to Otis, and Otis goes to Tucker and says, "Well, what happened?"
Or if you wanted to be honest with you, I'd rather do it a different way. I'd rather have Tucker and Mandy Rose get into the big fight where Tucker would say, she's a bitch, or I don't like her, how dare she come over to me, and then have some female on the roster go over to Tucker and say, yeah, this is the way Mandy always is. She's a selfish this, that, and the other thing. And you say, oh, I see what's coming. Tucker's going to get himself a girlfriend. And then we got Mandy Rose over here. We got another feud, don't we? We got Mandy Rose and the person who's sticking up for Tucker. There's things you could do with this. So many branches on a tree, and instead you just go for this easy, lazy bullshit that happens way too quick, and we don't have the opportunity to get emotionally invested in it, Mike.
That's right. And what I'm going to AEW for a second, but there have been a few missteps here with AEW, but for the most part, a lot of continuity is there with AEW, and a lot of the things, they've gotten a lot right with AEW. Now, there have been some missteps here and there, but they've got a lot right. It's got a lot right a lot more often than AEW, even NXT. In terms of their continuity and other things, they've got a lot right,
You know what makes it worse, Mike, though? Here's what makes it worse. What makes it worse is when you see the Roman Reigns angle, you realize they're capable of getting it right. It's almost like if you see an actor and he's brilliant in a movie, and then every other movie you see him in is total garbage, you're like, well, he must just be lazy because we know he's better than that. Well, that's the WWE. You've got this Roman Reigns angle. You're doing it exactly right. So you must know something about what you're doing. How come you can't do it with other things?
Right. How come? Why? And look, people are always talking about, why can't we go back to the Attitude Era or the Ruthless Aggression Era or this, that, and the other. You know why they're saying that? Because generally speaking, in those two eras, they got things right often and at a major clip, and they got their continuity correct in those two eras.
That's right. And it goes to your point that maybe they've just lucked out with this Roman Reigns thing, because it makes it very hard for me to believe that you can get something so right and then can't get anything else right. You know, if a painter paints a beautiful painting and everything else he does is lousy, you have to ask yourself, is he lazy or did he just get lucky with the one painting and for some reason it turned out okay? This is what it is with the WWE. The Roman Reigns thing is brilliant. But then how come you can't see through this Tucker and Otis isn't, Elias and Jeff Hardy isn't, and even Sasha and Bayley isn't? How come you can't see through that? How come you can't do those right? It's a shame. This could have been an A-plus pay-per-view. It still was a really good pay-per-view, thanks to Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. Anyway, Raw tonight should be interesting. We'll be back here tomorrow to talk about it. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.